Today is August 12th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. We're doing things a little differently this week. I'm joined right now for the whole show by TMO's morning editor, Jeff Gamet. Jeff, welcome.
Thanks, and this will be a fun and exciting adventure for us, I'm sure.
Right on. Let's get right into it. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
This week was WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. So in honor of the many and varied Mac developers out there, we'll take a look at some of the developer technologies that catch the eye.
During a demo of the upcoming release of macOS 10 version 10.5, Apple announced it is adding a file backup and restoration feature that it calls Time Machine. The feature lets you go back in time to find and recover any file, including system files, from your hard drive. Leopard users will be able to choose where their files are backed up and when backups happen. Developers can add Time Machine compatibility to their applications as well.
Apple also demonstrated a new core technology in OS X, Core Animation, which joins core audio, video, and image as a collection of packages developers can use to add functionality to their programs. The Application Programming Interface, or API, includes support for, among other things, placing two-dimensional images on different planes and painting those images onto 3D structures which can be moved and rotated. Core Animation also borrows the technique of modern animation software, automating the creation of 2D motion by using start and keyframes.
Now that's where, for example, if you have a window on the screen, you say, oh, it's down here in the bottom left corner, and for some reason the developer says, oh, I want it to be in the upper right-hand corner, instead of just having the thing disappear and reappear where it's supposed to be, Core Animation can make it slide smoothly from place to place. So
here's
one thing that they didn't talk about in the keynote. macOS 10.5 will also include the web application framework Ruby on Rails. The Ruby coding language is considered by many to be easy to use. Unfortunately, I have no idea what it does. perhaps we'll get into that in the context machine, Jeff?
Yes, we will, but not quite yet. First, here's a story on a non-Apple developer technology. Transgaming Technologies last week introduced Cider, a technology that the company said will enable publishers to quickly bring games to the Mac without the arduous code conversion process that's previously been required. On August 3rd, the company announced that a number of their top-tier video game publishers have plans to bring some of their upcoming games to the Mac with Cider. The company claims those publishers are a who's who list of the top publishers in the industry.
Yeah, whatever that means. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week. I bet this turns out to be a really big deal for people who play games on their Mac. The thing that's really interesting to me about this story is that Cider is meant for publishers and developers. All the other solutions in the past have tried to work this out from the end user's perspective. So Transgaming is hoping that consumers who buy Ciderized Mac games, again, whatever that means, will see no difference between them and the titles that would have been ported over in the traditional way. Of course, the real goal here, which Transgaming acknowledges that they're searching for, is to have hybrid releases of games. So it's really not a porting process at all. You just simultaneously release the game on both the Mac and the PC.
Okay, so now we can head into the context machine, right?
That's right. All right, so here we are, context machine. Jeff, let's do this like we always have. Let's start with a general question about WWDC for listeners who might not necessarily know how software gets written or the process that goes into creating applications on any platform. Why is it that developers have such an interest in core technologies? Why is it that Steve Jobs or anyone else gets up on a stage and says, hey, we've got Time Machine, we've got Core Audio, we're supporting Ruby on Rails? Why do developers get so turned on by that?
That's their special way. Actually, what Apple's doing when they release these technologies and tell developers about them so they can use them, what they're doing is making the developer's job easier. And they're saying, here you go. We've done all the hard work of creating all of this underlying structure that you need to be able to do all the really cool things that you're going to do with your program. So now all you have to know is where to go in each one of these core technology components to call up the piece that you need to do that special piece of magic that you want. So it's going to save developers tons of time, and knowing how to get into all these things is really important, hence the developers conference.
Now, let's start with core animation as a particular technology to talk about from an end user's perspective. So the developers like it because they can, you know, have Windows spin around and do funny things without having to code all of it, hard code it themselves. From an end user's perspective, what is this going to change about the way Mac users experience applications after OS 10.5 comes out?
I think we're going to start seeing a major change in the way program interfaces work. And we're going to see that our applications become more fluid. And by that I mean they'll have a more human-style, liquid, kind of flowy thing going on. So there'll be a more natural way of interacting with your computer. I'm also going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to agree with some of the predictions that other people have had, which is that when Leopard actually ships, it's going to ship with a brand new Finder, and it's going to be something that just blows our pants off, and it's thanks to things like core animation.
Now, people are going to be sitting there, you're telling me, using their Macs without their pants on anymore.
Doesn't everyone?
There's no accounting for taste. So presumably it's also possible that developers could go way off the deep end and say, oh, I'm going to write an application. This is going to be great. It's going to have all this flowing stuff. And it's basically just going to be a mush of stuff spinning around and bopping and moving. And it's going to suck. That's possible too, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. With great power comes great responsibility. And perfect examples are Comic Sans, when that font first came out. That became horribly overused. When people learned how to make drop shadows, that became horribly overused. And there's a whole list of technological little widgety cool gizmo things that have appeared with computers over the years, where they become something that is horribly abused in really bad ways. So yes, the same thing could happen here. What we'll have to hope is that people remember the lessons of drop shadow and that curl page effect on web page graphics, and we don't have to worry as much about these interfaces people may design that give us like strokes.
Well, I won't be holding my breath necessarily. I'm sure that we're going to see all kinds of stuff that's done in terrible taste. But I do agree with you. There is a lot of potential here to make the motion of stuff much more natural and to make the give users a sense of, oh, this thing is coming from over here and this thing spawned this action. Give a sense of where things are coming from and going to. For most people, the computer is a black box. You click something happens, and you don't necessarily know that one thing triggered another thing. If there's a more direct sense of, oh, this thing is responsible for this thing happening, I can imagine you could do a lot of that with core animation.
Absolutely. Do you remember the old Kai Power Tools for Photoshop and the amazing interfaces that he designed?
I don't.
Well, okay. Well, I guess that kind of dates me, doesn't it? Well.
Well, at least it identifies me as not a big Photoshop guy.
Okay. For the people out there that are familiar with Kai's power tools, Kai came up with this amazing interface style that was very organic. And when you'd first look at it, you go, what the hell is that? But when you saw how everything related to everything else, then it became a very natural way to work with your computer, and it also gave a really fluid way of manipulating your images, and things just kind of flowed. And it was a really great thing. So I think we're going to see some of that. essence.
All right, now I want to move on to talk about some of the other stuff, but very quickly, there's another practical question here, which is this going to slow down everyone's machines having all this animation?
No, just mine. No, if you have a slower,
for you.
Yeah, boy, howdy. Yeah, actually, what I think is going to happen is that Macs that are at the lower end of the supported hardware range for Leopard, we'll see some slowdowns there. For the newer machines, and especially the Intel-based Macs, not so much. And one thing to keep in mind is Apple is looking at this, I'm sure, from the perspective of, we don't want to make something that sucks. And so if their user base is complaining that this fluid motion does kind of more of a domo arigato, Mr. Roboto movement thing, they're not going to be happy. They want to have that real smooth thing going on. And so Apple, I'm sure, will have the code optimized by the time everything ships so that it's as smooth as it can possibly be on the low-end machines. And then on the high-end machines, it will be, what did Steve Jobs say? It'll
like
smooth
butter?
Like butter. Yeah.
he was the first person to say that, too.
Yes. I think he has a trademark on it.
Right, probably.
And we now have to pay a royalty. Oh!
Right. Always the thing with that company. They say something, you're like, oh, that's Apple said that. People have been saying it for 20 years. Let's talk a little bit about, the other thing I wanted to say about that, there's also the issue. If developers wanted to do it themselves, it would be much slower, I assume, because it's not built into the operating system. If you build it into the OS, you can farm it out to the graphics processor much more easily. Everything is kind of taken care of and tends to run much faster when things are built solidly into the OS. So that was the other consideration.
Right.
I want to talk about Time Machine. The public, when I read stuff about this, people seem kind of split about it. No one says, oh, this is dumb. They never should have done this. But at one end of this split, there are people like TMO's editor, Brian Chaffin, who said, and he said this in his notes while he was covering the show, he said, this is revolutionary. This is going to change people's lives and the way they deal with their computers. TMO's president, Dave Hamilton, on the Matt Geek Gab said, you know, this is fine, but it's really only a big deal for the people not like me, not like us, him and John, not Uber geeks, people that already back up their stuff. What side of this fence are you on? Do you think this is a huge deal, or do you think this is like, it's another feature in the operating system?
I'm going to jump firmly on the side of this is a huge deal. And I believe that it's a really big thing. And I'm going to go so far as to say I agree with Brian. This is going to be a revolutionary thing. On the other side of that, I'm going to agree with Dave that for the Uber geeks and the people that are already using retrospect and automated tape backup systems and they have their holographic whatever thing that stores all of their data for them so they never lose anything, they're not going to care. They're not even going to want to use this probably because they already have something else in place. But for the rest of the world, this is a big wow thing. And when you look at the number of people that don't back up their information, that's pretty much all of us.
Yeah, I mean, in the keynote, I forget the gentleman's name. It wasn't Steve Jobs who was on stage at the time, but he said, you know, we asked people, do you back up? And 25% of them said yes, but he said the people that actually have automated backup systems in place said 4% of users. Now, who knows exactly what automated backup system means, but it's somewhere, it sounds like it's somewhere between 4% and 25%, and none of those numbers are particularly substantial given that everyone always says everyone should back up.
Right. So what this is going to do is give the regular Mac user, the person that doesn't want to learn how to use a complex or sophisticated backup application, they're going to have everything they need right there. It will just work. They can go in and do some configuration, it looks like, and choose to back up or not back up certain types of files. But other than that, it's just this transparent thing. You let it go, and it does its own thing. And the really great thing is that if you realize the document you're working on today, you jacked up on Tuesday. And so you need to go back to Monday to find a version that isn't screwed up, so you don't have to spend 10 hours recreating this. No problem. You just hop into your little time machine, Wayback Machine, TARDIS, or DeLorean, whichever ships with your model of Mac, and go back. And you can go back to that day and grab that file. And it will be simple. It will be easy. It's just going to work. And that's going to be a fantastic thing.
Now, I actually think, I'm going to jump on this bandwagon as well. I actually think it's more revolutionary than even you and Brian have been saying. I think it's revolutionary in the following respect. If you look at the history of operating systems, like if you take classes on operating systems, the first generation of operating systems were designed so that developers didn't need to write in machine language. The second generation of operating systems, things like Windows NT, were designed so that and also many versions of Unix, and it took Mac OS X when it first came out was kind of a second generation operating system. They had things like protected memory that were designed to prevent the developers from screwing up. In theory, no one should need protected memory, right? The developers should all be smart enough that they never write code that screws up some part of the operating system. They never write code that runs over an important thing, other thing in memory. They should all be able to manage their own memory very well. But it's not a reasonable thing to expect every developer everywhere in the world to know what every other developer is thinking and doing. And so they had this thing called protected memory, and they kind of solved that problem so that developers could write the best code they could, and the operating system would take care of, you know, making sure that the applications didn't steamroll one another. So it's that kind of thing. This strikes me as a kind of third generation of operating system development, where now we're past the point of helping the developers out. Now the operating system is taking care of the dumbass users who do things like delete files that they didn't want or that they didn't want to delete or that they didn't mean to delete, or taking care of backups, which in theory we should be smart enough to do on our own. This is to me, this feels like a change in perception of the operating system, where you say, well, sure, we have operating systems that let developers not write in machine code. We have operating systems that help developers out so that they don't need to be all as careful as they did before about things like memory management. Now we're writing operating systems that help the users behave like humans rather than behave the way the computer expects them to behave. To me, it seems like a huge deal. Just conceptually, even if Time Machine itself is when it first comes out, this is a first step in a very new direction for operating systems, to me.
That sounds dreamy, and I really like it. Actually, I think you're right. This is an evolutionary progression of the technology, and we have gone from the protected memory phase, and now we're going into the protected document phase. So sure, from the OS standpoint, it really looks like we are moving from catering to what the developer needs. We've already handled that now. So now let's cater to what the user needs, and let's make a system that works for the user instead of making the user work for the computer. That's great. I agree with that. Yes.
All right, now let's come down out of the clouds and ask one more practical question. There are the same issues as with core animation about speed and you know whether or not this takes up a lot of processor time to copy all your files out to this other hard drive. But let's talk about the other practical question here. Storage space. Where are all these files going to get stored?
In your pocket.
That's going to be totally sweet.
It is. Don't get them wet. And don't feed them after midnight. Or how does that work again? I can't remember. Anyhow, the deal is you're going to need to make sure you have enough hard drive space to store all of this backup information. It looks like Apple's going to have some pretty robust compression algorithms and things like that working in the background to help conserve hard drive space. But my recommendation is, if you're going to take advantage of Time Machine, when you buy Leopard or you buy your new Mac that has Leopard pre-installed, go ahead and buy a nice-sized external hard drive that runs through FireWire and just connect it to your Mac, consider it part of the total cost of purchasing a new machine, and now you have this built-in, ready-to-go backup system.
Yeah, now it seems to me there are, well, first of all, one of the things that occurs to me is that I bet in the next 6 months we're going to see, well, maybe not in the next 6 months, but eventually it wouldn't surprise me if Apple started to sell systems with double hard drives for exactly this reason. It says, you know, we're giving you 80 gigs of storage space with built-in backup, meaning they give you a second hard drive that's capable of backing all your stuff up. So that, like he said, if one of your hard drives dies, you've got this whole backup on the second drive. You bring it into a Genius and they tinker around and make your backup drive your primary drive.
You know, they could take it a step farther and have something built into the system or Time Machine that says, oh, this first hard drive crapped out, but I've got the other one right here. Let me jump over and we'll just keep going.
In other words, create an automatic switchover system, and then hopefully it would tell you, hey, I switched over. You better replace the primary hard drive.
Right.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's a really cool idea, and I think that would be really great to see happen. However, keep in mind that if you have your primary hard drive and your backup hard drive in the same machine, and your office burns down with your computer in it, you just lost your original and your backup. So, still, you need to have something that gets away from your computer.
And that's the beauty of networked machines. Anyway,
yes.
What the hell is Ruby on Rails?
It's a train. Actually, Ruby on Rails is a really clever coding environment that you can use to make web-based applications. And developers really like it because it's easy to read, and the way the modules come together, it's really slick, and it's a very friendly development environment. So Ruby on Rails, it's a great thing that you're starting to see more of. A perfect example of Ruby on Rails in action, go to iconfactory.com. They just completely redesigned their entire site, and they're running Ruby on Rails for a lot of it. And it's a really slick system, and it was much easier for them to upgrade what they were doing to that than to use some of the other tools that are out there. And it also has the bonus of being compatible with the whole Web 2.0 standards and all that fun stuff.
And one day we'll have to talk about what Web 2.0 is and what some of those standards are. Let's talk, just to clarify here, so it's primarily used for web development.
Sure, yes.
And when we say web development, I mean HTML is what the browser decodes, this hypertext markup language, and that's been the case since the 90s. Presumably Ruby on Rails is helpful in designing the back end. So if there's dynamic content like stuff from accounts that needs to get pulled up and shown on the screen, or stuff from a database that needs to get pulled up and shown on the web page, it's the coding language that allows you to, you know, for example, pull stuff out of a database and then drop it into HTML and send that to someone's browser.
And it does it really well.
Right on. Let's talk a little bit about transgaming. Let's assume for the moment that this company, Transgaming, manages to make Cider, this thing that's going to allow people to port applications really easily to Intel Macs, games in particular. Let's imagine that they do it and it works. What's the impact going to be for Mac gamers?
That horrible waiting period, the patience that you need to have but don't when you want that new cool game for your computer, that's gone. It will be one of those things where when a Windows version of the next latest greatest game comes out, they'll, instead of making an announcement that they are working on a deal with a Mac gaming company to port the code, or we'll have a Mac version in 6 months but it'll be limited, that'll go away. It'll just be, here's the new game, it runs on Mac or Windows, and it's cool. Here you go.
And that would be runs on new Macs or Windows.
Yes. Intel Macs, that's going to be the requirement for this.
Now, should we expect that this is going to change the way hardcore gamers look at computers?
It may. Some of the hardcore gamers are really into building their own hardware, and they really work to tweak out their machines to give them the performance that they want for the types of games they play. And some of these hardcore gamers are going to look at a Mac and say, well, geez, that's really nice, but I can't go in and build it from the ground up myself. So
and I can't ridiculously overclock the CPU, and I can't, you know, cool it with liquid nitrogen and do other kinds
right.
of things.
Right, right. But I'm sure that someone will have a kit for the new Mac Pro before long that does let you put neon inside. So, you know, at least you'll have that.
Which is, by the way, for anyone who's never seen this, neon lights inside of a computer case is an absolutely critical addition. If you're building your own computer, it has to have neon in it.
Oh, yes. Yes. If you don't got that bling, you are so out.
All right. Is this going to change the situation for casual gamers at all?
For casual gamers, sure, but not to the extent that it will for the hardcore gamers, because it's really the hardcore gamers that sit there frothing at the mouth waiting for the new version of a game for their platform to come out. The casual gamers tend to be more along the lines of, hey, that really cool game is out for me, man. I'll go get it now. And so they're not going to be as worried, or excuse me, as excited about all of this. However, the fact that they can get their games faster will be a benefit to them.
And presumably it means that there will also be more games that they can get a hold of.
I would assume so, yes. And more money for game developers, which is good for all of us, because that means they'll keep making games for the Mac.
And that's going to have to be the last word in the context machine. If you have questions or comments about the news, you can send an email to me, to both of us, actually, at roundup@macobserver.com. Now, Jeff, if you would care to join me as well for the product roundup.
Okay. In gaming news, MacFun introduced a new website for casual Mac gamers called MacFun.com on Monday. The site features family-friendly puzzle, strategy, word arcade, and card games for Mac users at all skill levels. MacFun was created by Freeverse, and they're well known for the Mac games they've made, like Burning Monkey Solitaire and Legion Arena.
Sega on Wednesday announced that it will publish NHL East Side Hockey Manager 2007 on September 22nd. Developed by Sports Interactive, the game lets players take control of their own NHL team and make decisions about everything from contracts to playing styles to who will start and who will sit. Players will be able to review their team's games as they happen, but they won't actually be able to control the players on the ice. Eastside Hockey Manager is concerned with the big picture view, letting players make the kinds of decisions that coaches, general managers, and owners make. The game will be available only as a digital download, priced at $35 US.
And Otherworld Computing on Friday began offering RAM upgrade kits for Apple's new Mac Pro. That was fast. Prices start at $599 for a matched pair of two 1 GB modules and top out at $4,759 for a set of 8 2 GB modules. Otherworld Computing also offers rebates of $140 and $350 for 1 GB and 2 GB sets of factory-installed RAM.
Toshiba on Thursday introduced eStudio 360 CP, a color business printer that's networkable via Ethernet or Wi-Fi. It prints 32 pages per minute in color and 36 in black and white at 2400 DPI. It's available now for $3,550.
Oh, yeah. I so need to get me one of those.
I think everybody needs one of those. Finally, this week, Misha Sakalaraplo reviews the Ultrasone iCans, Kerry Scott's jam band holder for the iPod, and the NanoGo wallet.
And that's the news.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're trying some new stuff here. We're kind of putting Jeff on the spot and breaking them in a little bit. Let us know how we did. You can send comments to roundup@macobserver.com. It'll get to both of us. We're going to be making a few changes over the next few weeks. Nothing really drastic. The general content and format will stay roughly the same, but you know, let us know what you think as we're shuffling stuff around. And seriously, thanks for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Our content, as always, is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, including, of course, Mr. Jeff Gamet. So, Jeff, thanks for writing all that news.
Sure, and go TMO.
Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass, as always, is by Boom for TMO. And the podcast and Portable Media Expo is coming up at the end of September. And hey, Jeff, I'm actually going to that show. I will be there. So we will be talking about the podcast expo. So it should be really fun.
Very cool.
That's all I've got.
And please stay subscribed.
Until next week, we'll see you online.